You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Welcome to episode, 339. We're going to talk about Venezuela tonight. We're going to talk about the shutdown. Lots of great information. Harry is remote for reasons we'll explain. Aaron Ewert, after a two-year hiatus, is here. And our friend Alina is here. She is, I'm afraid of saying her last name because her mom might beat me with a chakala. So, a chakla. So, tune in. This is recorded on January 29, 2018, and we'll be right back.
Warning, this show is for adults, produced by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
All right, welcome to We Are Libertarians. We're so glad to be back this week. I had a nap, so I'm feeling very punchy, mostly towards Harry, who is not in the studio, who is remote. He is not even in his seat, and I'm very annoyed with how bad he sounds because he should know better. So he's on timeout, so I'm going to introduce Aaron first. Aaron, how are you?
Oh, doing well, Chris. How are you?
Doing well. It's been a long time. We'll explain why in a moment, if I'm allowed.
You look good. You look spry.
I'm very spry. Let me just turn this off, because otherwise we won't be able to hear him with such poor quality. You'd think after several hundred episodes of the show, Harry would understand how to do a broadcast, but that is not the case, apparently. Harry, how are you?
I'm going good.
See, listen to how quiet he is.
Barely hear you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. A public apology to Harry. I was blaming him for my own mistake.
Mark this calendar. I actually got a public apology. Mark that calendar.
Nah, I take it back because you sound even worse than before we started recording.
You mean it sounded worse?
I don't know, but I've got your other headset here. I'm keeping it hostage until you decide to come back. He left without his precious headset last week.
Yeah, that's my Bluetooth headset from the Empow collection, the finest Chinese Bluetooth headsets.
All right, and then third here on the show tonight is our friend Alina. I don't know if you want me to say your last name.
You can.
Okay. And I feel like I'm not going to say it right, because anytime I say your last name, I feel like I say it too white.
Yeah, probably. Alina, pretend there's an E at the end.
Alina Pabon.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, see, I did pretty well. Now, Alina is from Colombia, as she says. And so I sent her a message today, and I was like, hey, can you come on in case we say some gringo shit? And you can go, no, that's not how it actually is. She's been to Colombia in the last, 12 months, and so she's got some stories, and she's going to give us some details about some of that stuff. I met you, Alina. You slid in our DMs, actually.
I did.
Yeah, our Snapchat, the We Are Libertarian Snapchat, which I don't use anymore. And we've become good friends. You live in Dayton. You live like an hour and a half away, 2 hours away.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so she's a libertarian and in college. And then Aaron has not been here. Do you want to say why you have not been here for 2 years?
Oh, well.
You and I have the distinction of being the only two members of We Are Libertarians to have a divorce caused by We Are Libertarians.
Well, I mean, it didn't help. Didn't help.
It didn't. No, in my case, I was.
And we had a rule in place at the time. I don't know if you guys do that anymore.
Yeah, don't cause any marriages to end. And unfortunately, that rule got violated in your case.
Well, it got brought up in court, but you know.
Right.
That and the memes.
Right. We Are Libertarians has been, that was Alina with the bottle clinking, and I was going to yell at Harry for it. But then I remember her wada wada. We Are Libertarians has actually been in a court case, in your court case.
Yeah, yeah, it sure was. It's very, in the minutes.
Very distinct. Yeah, you've not been on the show forever. A lot of things have changed since you've been on the show.
Sure. Where's Greg?
All right.
What?
I think it's athwarthistory.com. So, yeah.
Is that three divorces?
No, I think just two.
Ooh. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Oh, I see what you're doing. You're too clever for me. No, that's just two. That was more of a gruesome breakup. I'm playing with the audio in the background. Now, Harry, why are you not here?
I'm not here because I made the mistake. Well, the awesome opportunity, and I got to hire James Neese for the company.
Why?
Now, Aaron, for those of you who don't know James Neese, who is James Neese, Aaron?
James Neese is an enigma. He's
wrapped in a mystery.
Yeah, but he's the most peculiar person you'll ever meet.
James is our resident mutualist, our resident left libertarian.
I think he started 4chan or something.
He is one of the original 4chan mods on Random, and he. I got distracted by your text message.
It was Hannah.
Yeah, Aaron is dating Hannah, who was on last week, and she texted, so I just assumed they were in a fight.
No.
So I was trying to get the tea.
She's worried about the furnace. It's going to be cold tonight.
So James Neese went on vacation in Jacksonville. He went dumpster diving. He is he's 4chan incarnate.
But he'll run for public office
all
and
the
then
time.
He'll talk just like he talks amongst us.
Yes.
But like on stage at a debate.
Yeah.
In a public forum.
He uses 4chan language when he debates. He's one of the most intelligent people you'll ever meet in your life. He's incredibly smart, but he's just a different cat. The first time I met him, he looked like Tiny Tim. Not the Christmas Carol, but like the 70s ukulele player.
Yeah, when I met him, his hair was about 4 feet long.
Right.
And he was working for Rupert, I believe.
He had a 3-piece suit on, and he was something else. He's a father.
He would take like 40s to the truck stop and try to campaign that way. Yeah. he would try to talk to truckers that were trying to sleep. He'd like knock on their door.
So, Harry, now why did you hire him?
Yeah.
I hired James because I needed a technician to run the indie facility that I've taken over in the last week. And I needed someone that could go in there, build that place up, because it needs a lot of work. And it kind of freaked me out. And it's not really freaking him out. He actually took it as a challenge.
Right.
And it is strange to watch him work. Because it's just a completely two different schools of the way two different people do IT. There's two different ways to do it. And he's part of that other school. And I've never really seen that part. And I kind of like it. You know,
James's brain doesn't work like anybody else I've ever met.
No, it does not. And it's kind of what that place needs. And I didn't realize that until like he showed up for his job interview in like a white tee and khakis.
Right. Professional.
Impressed everybody.
Right.
And I was like, what? He said, like, I just had to show up in a suit. And he's in his white tee.
Well, Harry, never mind.
Yeah. But no, so there's all these things that was going. So he basically runs at 110% the entire time. He gets there. And he's at 110% the whole day. And I'm trying to leave at 5 o'clock.
Right.
And he's still moving on 110% of other issues coming in and going, yeah, we can leave this to tomorrow. Nope, we're gonna get this done now. So I'm sitting there and like 6 o'clock helping him install and get all these printers and stuff installed.
Yeah, and so you text me at like you're always on time. You're always here like right at 7 on the dot, and like 6:30 you're like, hey, I can either be real late or I can zoom in. Yeah. So I said, Alina's zooming in, so why don't you too? So not actually mad at Harry. People are concerned that you and I are fighting too much. It's not real.
It's not real.
Well.
Trust me.
Just a little bit.
And if we did do it, you know, we'd make sure, you know, on air as we do it, you know, throwing things at each other.
But for God's sake, can you please sit still? Like, Alina is just sitting there like a statue. Like, she's just statuesque, and you've been around Neese too much. You're ticking all over the place.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry.
I'm trying not to move.
I can't help but inspect his basement.
I know.
It looks like he needs some drainage.
What is that? Let's switch the view here. What in the world?
He's gotten some water before, and they had to trim the bottom of the paneling off, it looks like.
Clearly, water up to this level.
What is that behind you? Is that a fireplace?
It's not a fireplace. Behind me is another table. This is where my mixer board used to sit back here. When I was streaming, I used to have the mixer board and everything back here.
Right.
Now I moved it to that side of the basement, which is
That's right. He has a soundboard and a good mic, but he chose to use this for the show tonight.
I have a 1,000 square foot studio here in the Cyberloafing Studios, and I am setting up another location to stream it because the spot where I'm streaming at now was meant to sit with the other Cyberloafers here to stream. Well, I'm by myself now, so I don't need this massive area. So I've been setting up a new recording area in the corner, in the closet.
But that doesn't change the fact. What is that hole in the wall behind you?
Oh, that is where they cut the paneling here because it did because water didn't get in here. So they had to cut up to the they cut up that high for the
So you had a flood
remediation.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Because after
you could have just said that. We could have started there.
Yeah, because I got this house in right around the housing crisis. So the person who had the house before me, they foreclosed, and when they foreclosed, they turned the power off, and when they turned the power off, they turned off all the sump pumps.
Ooh.
So what happens to a basement? It floods.
Aaron's. If you're in the Indiana, Ohio.
No, I just do Central Indiana.
All right, Aaron. Yeah. Aaron does. Crawl space. What do you do?
Stabilize foundations. I fix wet basements. I fix damp crawl spaces and lift sinking concrete, sidewalks, driveways.
Hit Aaron up. All right. Now let's jump into Venezuela. This has all been fascinating. Believe me.
No, let's stand back and watch. Let's not jump in and go there.
Let's not jump into Venezuela. to give you just the real cliff notes version. There was a recall. So let's go way back. So Hugo Chavez comes in the. We're not live tonight. So. Just to let them know that they can watch it. You can watch this all on YouTube. Normally, we're live for our Patreon people, but because of the Zoom, we're just going to stream it on Facebook and Facebook later. So check it out there. So now let's go way back into Venezuelan history, into the 90s. So in 61, there was a constitution that was written, and then Hugo Chavez comes along in the 90s and starts promising a socialist paradise, and the poor are getting shafted, and I'm going to take all this oil revenue and I'm going to do great things for you, socialize medicine, food, all kinds of poor relief, which he ended up doing, which is part of their issue. And he becomes president in 98, 99. I think
96.
And so he becomes president, and in 99 they hold a new referendum and they form their new national legislature, and that is there's a guy who says he's president, okay, and the guy who says he's president is head of that legislature. Mm-hmm. Now last year when Maduro came into power in 2013 when Chavez died, he narrowly won an election, and right as Maduro takes office, Chavez builds up all this poor relief, all this massive spending. They never laid off the spending, but oil prices were really high through the 2000s, and so they could afford it. But then right as Maduro takes over in 2013, oil prices start to plummet. And when that happens, all of a sudden, they can't afford to pay for anything, and so they start printing money. Stop me if this sounds familiar. And eventually it tips into hyperinflation. And now we're looking at a country that where your average person has lost 28 pounds. It's called the Maduro diet. And there has been a lot of unrest.
And he laughs about it.
Right. He laughs about it. He thinks it's hilarious. He's a total sociopath. And last year there was a recall for Maduro. 86% of people don't support him at this point. They, you know, we'll ask Alina in a moment, but it seems to have always been more of a socialist-leaning country. And so there was a recall, and there was some dispute over whether or not they had the right signatures. It eventually was verified they did get enough signatures to recall him. They run an election. It's basically a sham election. And after that, he sets up another assembly. So now there's two competing legislatures in Venezuela. One that is beholden to Maduro. The other is the existing 2000 legislature. The Supreme Court there stripped the power from the old legislature and gave it to the new. The Supreme Court there has not ruled against Chavez or Maduro since 2005. So it's completely stacked in favor of the existing regime. And so they say this election was fine. And Maduro says, I won this recall election. But the old legislature has basically said, no, the president is absent given these pieces of the Constitution. And the president of the assembly then assumes the position of leadership in the country and hold for about 30 days and then holds another election. And so they're pressing the issue. So what the leaders of the old assembly are saying is that Maduro cheated, and so therefore he's not a valid president. He wasn't able to be sworn in on January 10th. And so the old legislature and our president are now in charge. So he's not saying he's president of the country. He's saying that the position of president by Maduro is vacated, and so therefore we need to hold a new election. And once that happened, thanks to people like Marco Rubio, has been in touch with Guaido, who is the president of the old assembly, and many other people in Venezuela. He's the senator from Florida. He is going through. He is really pushing the Trump administration and people like John Bolton, who is the United Nations secretary, the UN ambassador during Bush. And you have to think back to Hugo Chavez in the 2000s. Do you remember when he said he spoke right after Bush and he goes, "It still smells like sulfur." Like John Bolton and the war and the hawks from the Bush administration have always hated this guy. Bolton just declared them part of a troika of terror, Nicaragua, Cuba, and Venezuela. And so John Bolton in the administration is really pushing for intervention. And so the administration is doing several things. We'll talk about whether or not it's proper. But that's just kind of the Cliff Notes version of what has happened. But I want to talk to Alina a little bit about what she's heard. Because, Alina, you're Colombian. You came here when you were how old?
Five.
Okay, so you're five. You're not five. You're in your early 20s now. But you maintain really strong Colombian roots, and you go back a lot, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Feel free to elaborate. So when you talk to your friends and family, like, what kind of connections do you personally have in your circles to Venezuela?
So Venezuela is right next to Colombia, so we've gotten like a lot of refugees. A lot of people have fled from Venezuela into Colombia, which is really interesting because it used to be the opposite way. Like when Venezuela was really prosperous and they were doing well, like a lot of Colombians were going over there because that's where the money was.
Yeah, during the FARC revolutions, it's probably about the time that your parents emigrated here. A lot of people were going to Venezuela where they were oil rich. And now I saw a Vox documentary where the guy was interviewing this family who had gone to Venezuela, and so when refugees came to Colombia, they said, "Well, you helped us, let us help you."
Yeah.
Is there a shared ancestry there? I imagine there probably is.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think there's something like, did you tell me it was 10% or 10 million people from Venezuela have gone into Colombia?
Well, the thing that I watched, it said that 10% of the people have fled. I don't know if they've all gone to Colombia. I assume that a lot of them have just because it's right next door and it's probably the easiest.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was just there this summer, and like this has been going on for years. This isn't like a just happened thing. So people have been going to Colombia from Venezuela for some time now. And like the people there, I haven't heard anyone be like, "Oh, why are all these Venezuelans here?" Like I've heard mostly positive, like, remarks and, like, oh, what are we going to do? But one thing you don't think about is, like, people are going into Colombia and they also need papers. So, like, there, some people are there illegally. Mm. It's kind of the same issue that we're having here.
What are the kind of, what is the vibe of immigration in Colombia? I mean, is it, you know, from the founding of this country, for whatever reason, for a country of immigrants like America, they've wanted to keep immigrants out. I mean, what is the feeling towards new immigrants coming into Colombia?
I think that they're open to it. Like I said, I haven't heard anything bad. I think what I've heard most people say is, like, how do we help these people? Like, what is it that we can do? Because it's not like, because in Colombia, there's also people that need help. And so it's just like, it's not like there's just the open jobs and, like, open houses and, like, all this stuff for them to just come over and be able to take.
Yeah, I saw the house that they were all living in was not much more than a lean-to. I mean, I don't really know Colombia, but, like, for Americans, I think when we think of South America, we think of dirt poor, like, literally on dirt, like, so can you kind of dispel that myth, or is that the truth? Like, what?
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's areas that are like that, but it's not really like that. Like, you, if you go there right now, that's not what you're going to see.
Right.
It's, I think a lot of people have this myth of, like, Colombia is just a bunch of houses on dirt made of, like, planks.
Right. Or we watched Narcos and that's our frame of reference.
Right, right. And that's not even what it's really like, so.
Yeah. So what are the stories that you've heard from people coming from Venezuela to Colombia?
So my aunt, my uncle, so his wife is from Venezuela and her family, most of her family's still there. So, like, I was talking to them because we have a family group chat and everyone's just, like, worried, like, what are these people going to be doing? Like, what is it that they can do? Because up until now, they've had, like, hundreds of people killed that are, like, in protests, and they're just, like,
in the last like, couple weeks, there's been 700 people jailed. There's been at least 36 people that have been killed in protest in Venezuela in the last week or so.
Yeah.
Do Colombians fear, or Venezuelans fear, a civil war taking place there?
They're just scared for, like, what is going to happen, because it's either going to get better or it's going to get worse.
Right. So I imagine people from South America, like, to us, this would be like, are people from South America just used to this constant regime change and turnover?
I don't know. Like, it's weird because I see the side of, like, living here and being so immersed in the United States, that part of me is just like, oh, how is it really affecting me? But I do have family in Colombia and I do know people from Venezuela. So it's just like, I don't think you realize what these things are until it personally affects you. Like, it almost sounds like a made up story.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And until you have, like, people that you know affected by it, it's, like, really hard to grasp.
So have you heard a story that, like, really impacted you?
I mean, I have my aunt. She says that, like, her parents, who are obviously older, like, they're in the street protesting. And it's just kind of scary to think about all these people feeling, like, so scared in the street. And not only that, but, like, they don't even have food or medicine. Like, it's one thing, like, if I'm about to go out and, like, protest. But then, like, I can't imagine doing that on top of, like, not having food, not having any basic needs met. I feel like that just puts them even more in a vulnerable position.
Yeah, part of the problem is that people became dependent in the 2000s and the aughts, like, of the Venezuelan government giving you free food, free medicine, free healthcare, free education. And then when the government collapsed under Maduro, all of that went away. And so now those people who are dependent on the government, which this is a cautionary tale when we start talking about socialized medicine in this country, when the government collapses, then all of a sudden people can't afford any of that because they've inflated away their money.
Right. He was so stuck on his ideology that there was no contingency plan put in place. And you've got all these people that aren't used to having to go out. And
they've lost the muscle on how to go out.
It's atrophied.
Yeah. Right. How to create a living for themselves.
Correct. And this not just happened under Maduro. This also happened under Hugo. It was happening as, and this is something that was happening. The Hugo Chavez multiple times kept raising the minimum wage as he was basically watching the writing on the wall of, hey, mm-hmm. this house of cards is falling down. You know, they were making plans of going after different industries because, right. like, okay, we can't just go on oil. And they were starting to eat up other industries. But a lot of other businesses that was in Venezuela was starting to pull out. And so it just, you know, this was not just like, don't get no pie in the sky idea that, you know, it was just Maduro. If Hugo Chavez would have kept living, you know, everything would have been fine. That is not the case.
No, they were too dependent on a single source of income. And you know, the Trump administration today put sanctions on effectively what is Citgo. If you don't know, Citgo is owned by Venezuela's government. And so if you're buying Citgo gas, you're funding Maduro.
Yeah, I mean, I was back when I was severely libertarian and autistic. I used to go around. If I was running out of fuel, I'd rather push my car to a different gas station than stop at a Citgo.
Well, it was always weird when I worked at the Motor Speedway because you'd interview, you know, Milka Duno or EJ Vizo, and they're directly sponsored by the Venezuelan government to run in the Indy 500, and you're like,
ugh.
How do you feel about that? Like, well, so.
I think Venezuela put all their huevos in one basket.
Okay. Don't you laugh at that, Alina. That was horrible. You apologize to the listeners right now. Aaron's full of dad jokes, Alina. He is a dad, but he's
I'm allowed to. I have two. Yeah. I have a teenager almost.
So what were you going to say, Harry?
Oh, I was just going to say that there's other larger industries in Venezuela, but like I said, they watched what they did to the oil industry and just decided to start pulling out or didn't have certain industry there. You know, there was other stuff that happened in Venezuela. Venezuela was like a huge hub for a while, and they just started, you know, but like I said, the businesses started to see the writing on the wall and started to pull out.
And Alina, you're shy, so you're going to have to jump in. You're quiet. So if you have something you want to say, then just talk. Okay, and we'll pause for you. All right?
I just don't want to be like stereotype, be like, oh, you're just being Hispanic and being loud and obnoxious.
That's why you're here.
Then why did you wear the gold hoop earrings?
Yeah. I always wear these earrings.
Point proved. Thank you, Alina. No. So yeah, feel free to jump in. How about Colombia? Because I think what most people know about Colombia is
cocaine.
Escobar and narcos coffee. And coffee.
Blanca Nieve.
Second best coffee in South America.
So, would you like to fight him on that, Alina?
No.
Okay.
Right. Because everyone knows Brazilian coffee is the best.
I don't think Brazilian coffee is the best. I've been told Guatemalan coffee is the best.
Guatemalan coffee is really good, though.
So, what is the government structure? Because I've seen liberals, there's the weirdest thing going on with the anti-war left and anti-war libertarians where all of a sudden they've become Maduro fans. And they start bashing, you know, the new Brazilian president who's this scary white right wing monster who, why are we, you know, I saw Ilhan Omar bashing him. It's like he's been there for less than a month. Like he's already turned it into Nazi Germany. It's just nonsense. But I've seen Colombia's government get tagged with the, you know, this right wing government, because in a lot of South American history, you have either socialist like Hugo Chavez coming on fighting for the people, and then they centralize it for their gang and then give a little bit to the people, or it's, you know, the right wing elites who kind of pool resources for just themselves and then they give a little bit. It's not really, it doesn't seem that much different. But what is the structure in Colombia? I know there's been a lot of arguments and back and forth in the Colombian government lately.
I mean, there's a lot happening in Colombia right now. They're still dealing with the FARC. Like, we just had a presidential election this past summer, and part of that, people were scared because one of the, like, part of the deal was that they were trying to resolve all the conflict with the FARC, and part of that was that they got to have someone from their party, like, run for president.
Can you explain who FARC is?
The FARC is just like,
like communist rebels, right?
Yeah, they're just like these rebels that they have like a lot of people following them. And like the people that follow the FARC they're not part of the government. It's just like a whole separate thing. But the reason that they're so big is because all their money, they have it all illegal, like all the operations that they run.
Right.
It's just not good stuff. And so like the people in Colombia, there's a lot of areas that the government doesn't really help. And so the FARC comes in and pretty much says, you either join us or we kill you. And between those options, they don't really have any.
That's pretty much how the Taliban has operated in Afghanistan forever as well. Yeah, it's they go into villages and they say, cooperate with us or cooperate with the Americans. And obviously they choose with the people who are going to be there when the Americans leave.
Right. They're there. And like if they get anything, it's from the FARC. So they either have something and join them or they have nothing and die.
Right.
And the Colombian government can't really fight that because they have way more like manpower and more people willing to die for that cause. I don't like the military in Colombia isn't like it is here. Like I don't hear people in the military there be like proud of being in the military. They're like, oh, I have to do this. So like no one wants to fight the FARC. Yeah. No, like
why?
They have more. From what I understand, is like they have like more people and more resources than the government does.
Okay, so it leads to an uneasy tension. So is the who is the elected president of Colombia, and are they like some right leaning dictator, as the left is portraying them?
Not really. Like it's weird because like the elections that we had this summer, I guess that in order for someone to be president, they have to get like 50%, and the political parties there aren't like they are here. It's not like just Democrats.
It's more parliamentary.
There's like a lot of different political groups there.
Right.
And so it breaks it up even more. And so when we had since I live here, I had to go all the way to Detroit just to register to vote, which is like, 5 hours from where I live?
Right.
Wow.
Then on a different day, I had to go to Chicago to actually vote. And then since no one got like the minimum in order to become president, they had to do a whole nother election.
And you have to go to Chicago again.
I wasn't even here. I was in Colombia when that happened. So like I couldn't even vote. Like,
well, you sent me the video of all these, because I didn't really know what was going on. It was late last week, and you sent me this video of all these people in the streets. And Venezuela and Colombia, their flags, their colors seem similar. And so I literally said revolution or soccer. And it could have been either, but it was the Venezuelan protest. I mean, it was an absolute mass of people.
Yeah.
And you know, I heard the weirdest thing. I heard the weirdest thing from Daniel McAdams, and we'll kind of get into this. We'll get into the notes here in just a second. But Daniel McAdams, who is the co-host on the Ron Paul podcast, he was on Scott Horton, and I respect Scott Horton a lot. I don't know Daniel McAdams to say that I really respect him, but I mean, if he's with Ron Paul, he's probably cool. But the Scott Horton podcast that they put out today or yesterday about Venezuela was really weird, because they almost were trying to make the argument, especially McAdams, less Scott Horton, that Maduro was a legitimately elected person, which he wasn't. That recall was completely fixed. And so therefore, why are the people in the streets, why do they get a bigger voice than the people who vote? And I think from a Western perspective, from people who are here, when we look at people, when we look at people in the streets in Venezuela and we see that many people, like that's a visual thing. I think this happens anywhere. We look at it in third world countries or developing countries. We look at people in the streets and we go, wow, that's really inspiring. When it happens in Western countries like France, oh, this has to be stopped. This is outrageous. We can't have this sort of thing. But when you hear the idea that the people who voted are, and their point was, why do people in the streets have more legitimacy in the minds of Americans than the people who voted? Well, I think we think that all voting is corrupt in South America. I mean, is that a valid thing to think?
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
Well, From what I understand of what happened in Venezuela is, like, the people that did vote were either bought to vote. I mean, I feel like they say that even here in the United States is, oh, those people were paid to vote this way. So I think that people think that anywhere.
Well, they were literally in that referendum, they were literally using terrorism to force people to vote in the rural areas for Maduro. And so he won by a pretty healthy margin when he barely squeaked by in the 2013 vote.
You also have to look at how much of the population actually voted.
Okay.
Like, they're saying that only 20% voted. And so, like, what happens to the other 80%? Like, if 80% of our country was in the streets right now protesting, like, I feel like that would be extremely alarming.
Yeah.
That's a huge majority of people.
So before we start getting into the full nitty-gritty details of all this in our research notes, do you see a difference in Spanish press when you're reading press that's in Spanish versus American press? Like, do you see a difference?
I don't really read that much, like, Spanish press, just because I feel like it's too much.
What do you mean?
Like, out of all my time spent reading the news, like, very rarely do I read the Spanish press. Like, the only time I hear it is when I'm in Colombia and, like, the news is on, or, like, people in my group chat and my family in my group chat are, like, talking about something. But I very rarely am like, oh, let me decide what to do with my spare time. Oh, I know, I'll read some news in Spanish.
Like, right. Okay.
I can't say that I'm very up to date with that, or, like, know very much about that.
I thought when you said it was too much that, like, they wave chacalas.
Yeah, chanclas.
Chanclas. I'll get it by the end. I just think that's really funny.
If you get beat enough with one, you'll remember the name.
Yeah. White people use Hot Wheels tracks.
Hot Wheels tracks. Alina, in America, so when you have kids and you're raising them in the American way, you beat them with either a wooden spoon or a Hot Wheel track.
That's the Italian weapon of ass destruction.
Yes. So I'm German in Germany and Italian families, in German and Italian American families, it's the wooden spoon. Now, in country bumpkin families, I've learned this week that it's Hot Wheels tracks.
That and I think Hannah's parents had her pick a switch.
Pick a switch, yeah. Now, Harry, what about black families?
First off, it's more important to beat the kid with something that they love. You know, you get bonus points for that. So if you take something that they love and then you beat them with it. But I was like, most of the time in black families, it is usually like the comb, shoe, closest thing that you can get, they can get their hands on usually. And or belt.
Yeah. All right, okay.
Hashtag don't beat your kids. Hashtag peaceful parenting.
All right. So let's jump into the notes. Let's give you more of the details about Venezuela. This was prepared by Hody Johns, who always does a fantastic job both on the dailies and on the notes. So if any of the three of you want to jump in and interject something, then feel free to speak up as we kind of go through the details of what's happening in Venezuela. So let's start with the crisis. So it's being deemed, Venezuela is deemed as a failure of socialism. And even the New York Times released an article saying, yes, Venezuela is a socialist catastrophe. So if Venezuela took only its oil production and sold it on the market and split amongst all of its citizens, their citizens would be the fourth richest people in the world. That is with no other form of economic gain. That's how much oil there is in Venezuela. They have a type of crude, which we'll get into the actual crude and the oil, because I've seen, you know, this is a coup for oil, which is not necessarily the case in my opinion, but we'll talk about that.
It's just interesting that we're so interested in Venezuela right now.
It's so hot right now.
Yeah, with all the oil there.
So, yeah, they need freedom, Aaron.
Yeah.
Got to bring their freedoms.
So, instead, they are now among the poorest, despite all of that wealth. Of all the countries outside of Africa, this is why I wish I had my printed notes. It keeps switching on me. I'm turning into full boomer right now.
Yeah, only Afghanistan has the worst standard of living.
Yeah, so Afghanistan is even poorer outside of Africa. So Africa obviously has the poorest countries. And Honduras even topped Venezuela in shelter, food, and water supplies. Haiti. You go to Haiti.
No. Yeah, I'm not a catracho.
Okay. They have begun rationing toothpaste. It's that severe down in Venezuela. They've begun to print money to account for their debts. And since 2000, their inflation rate had never been above 40%. And in 2018, it was $1.3 million. I've seen 10 million percent. I've seen 20 million percent by some estimates. But I think it's 10 million percent inflation, according to the World Bank, at some points. So
it's like Zimbabwe.
So Zimbabwe is like sextillion percent at this point.
Oil barrels of pennies.
Yeah. So the economy is crumbling, and for the last 5 years, their GDP has been negative, a feat even marveled by the poorest countries in the world. And for the last 3 years, their GDP has lost 16 and 17% every single year. That's the gross domestic product. To put that into perspective, GDP measures stuff and services. Imagine that you lost 50% of everything you owned over the last 3 years, and that is what the citizens are going through. Think of it as individuals have lost 50% of their stuff, their valuables, their ability to make money, their goods and services. The USA has actually become a net oil exporter over the last year, and without their favorite buyer, Venezuela has had to sell to countries that offer far less than the US did. In American fashion, the US only put sanctions on Venezuela after they no longer needed their oil. Now,
coincidence.
Yes.
Total coincidence.
So they have a heavy crude that is only refinable by a coke plant in Corpus Christi, Texas. Canada has a similar kind of oil. And so the idea that this is for oil, I'm sure it's may play a factor. But at the end of the day, the Koch brothers have a fairly good relationship with the Venezuelan government because they need the oil. They have the plant and Maduro needs to sell the oil. So, you know, I don't think the Koch brothers are hanging out with Donald Trump. They pretty much hate each other, arguing that we need to do this for oil. So sometimes I think these cliches, these anti-war cliches, don't actually get to the truth and probably do a bit of a disservice. I mean, how much do you guys think that oil wealth factors into this?
Well, I think it has to be the driving factor for why, you know, businesses are even interested in Venezuela right now. I mean, and I think that there's a rampant corporatism involved in trying to get this. I'm hesitant to say this new guy is going to be better than Maduro. I mean,
Guido.
Guido. Yeah, Guido. I don't know.
Not Guido.
But I mean,
hey, Guido.
why is he the guy? You know.
Well, that's sort of the
You know, who's propping him up? Who's supporting him?
That's actually the feeling in Venezuela. The 86% of people want to get rid of Maduro, but they're resentful. And Alina, maybe you can speak to this a little bit. They're resentful of Donald Trump in the United States interfering in this in any way, shape, or form. And as a result, hesitant to buy into whatever Guaido might be selling.
It seems like Groundhog's Day.
Yeah. I don't know. What I understand is Guaido right now is just stepping in until they figure it out. That's because right. He's the head of the National Assembly.
Right.
And so there's no legitimate president. From what I understand is like in their constitution, that's who steps in until they have that seat filled.
Right. So he's 35. We'll talk a little bit more about him here in just a moment, but let's talk about a little bit of the starvation. Go ahead, Harry.
With the oil thing, right? It's completely not about the oil, though, because the Venezuelan government has destroyed their oil producing capacity over the years as well. Yes, it's a heavier, harder crude. They also didn't put the money into their plants, so their plants that get it on the boats, that has been destroyed, has not been reinvested into. The boats that the shipping boats that can ship the crew barely pass safety inspection to go through a lot of different international channels, so they have to go around into different azores because their boats don't pass inspection or cannot travel the sea to get to the United States either.
Yeah,
so it's a huge expense.
And Harry, I really like when I dig into the details of this, it doesn't seem like the American government's getting a lot out of the oil of Venezuela. And so I know we kind of all buy. Listen, we've invaded because of the Monroe Doctrine. I don't think we're really going to talk about in the notes, but the Monroe Doctrine essentially came about under James Monroe, the last of the founding presidents. And it was the idea that the Americans should have control of the Western Hemisphere. And it was at a time when America was very weak. I mean, it's the last of the founding presidents. The War of 1812 hadn't gone all that well. There wasn't really a military. And so the Monroe Doctrine was basically, we need to keep any European power out of our hemisphere because it threatens our security. And the Monroe Doctrine has been used to justify 41 different interventions in South American and Central American countries. And so it is very easy for us to look at a situation like this and just kind of go, well, history is repeating itself. But we do have to kind of dig into the details here and see exactly what might be taking place. Let's not jump the gun. Let's not say that we're staging a military coup. There's some evidence that obviously John Bolton would like to. But we're not at that point yet. And so is it a coup so the American government and the CIA can take over oil? I'm not seeing a lot of evidence as of right now that that's what's taking place. I'm not so naive as to think that this person, Guaido, is doing any of this by himself. Obviously, Marco Rubio is involved, John Bolton, yeah. Pompeo, the Trump administration are all involved in this. But I don't see a lot of benefit necessarily for the Americans to have to tip a country into civil war.
I think there was an opportunity there. We've obviously seen an opportunity to finally get rid of
this regime.
And they
yes.
whispered in yeah. Guaido's ear, hey, you take the leap, we'll support you.
Right. And I think that's absolutely
and that's
it. Yeah.
Several other countries besides U.S.
Yeah. Canada right. was actually the one who was leading yeah. the conversations about
Russia,
all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
China's kind of playing a backseat because Venezuela owes them so much money and they stand no real benefit to get rid of the communist leader there.
China and Russia want to get their money back because they've loaned a lot of money to the Maduro government. So let's jump back into what's happening in Venezuela because we're so excited to talk about a coup that we're jumping ahead in our notes here, which is my fault. Who doesn't love a good coup? So the starvation and if you're living in Venezuela, it's very bad. So I took an Uber ride in Orlando this year, and I had an Uber driver from Venezuela, and I got so into him telling his story that we got totally lost and almost missed our dinner. He was a former dentist, and he was a fairly well-off person who was in an opposition party. He supported the opposition party against Maduro, and he had to flee the country. He was driving an Uber car in Orlando in 2018 instead of practicing. But he said, 50% of the country, they're just eating trash. They're literally eating trash to survive. It is a very serious humanitarian crisis that's happening there. 8 out of 10 Venezuelans report eating less because they are either broke or the rationing has decreased. 6 out of 10 Venezuelans report going to bed hungry consistently. The government has begun to cut down on food rations and even available purchase options. Over the last 4 years, cornmeal, bread, pasta, vegetables, dairy, and fruit have all seen double-digit percentage cutbacks. Beans and yucca, which is like a potato, dispersion has nearly doubled to compensate for this. So a lot of beans and a lot of is it yucca? How do you say that?
Yucca.
Okay. Alina, when I say they're cutting back on cornmeal and bread and pasta, vegetables, dairy, I mean, these are staple items.
Yeah, beans and rice.
Yeah. So 9 out of 10 people can't afford even the rationed food.
But the thing is, like, I've been hearing that people don't have food for years.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I've been for at least, I don't even know, maybe 2 or 3 years, maybe even more. Like, it just keeps getting worse. In my head, I'm thinking, like, how can you cut back on nothing? Like, what?
Right.
I don't even know how these people.
How they're even surviving at this point.
Yeah.
Next is medicine. The waiting list, even for life-saving treatments, are prohibitively long, even approaching years. In a particularly sad twist of fate, Venezuela was the first country to eliminate malaria in 1961. Now in 2019, 10 of their 24 states have widespread outbreaks, and they're projected to have 1 million cases in 2019. Malaria is the number one killer of people in the world, which is why Bill Gates took it on. Alina, you were going to say something?
Well, I saw a video, and it was talking about how they don't even have vaccines, so people are getting, like, polio.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's I mean, you've done a lot of work in Haiti, Aaron. I mean, it sounds a lot like what you've described in Haiti.
Yeah, I mean, if not worse. Sounds like, I mean, there's parts of Haiti that obviously aren't as bad.
Right.
And it seems like it's gotten better over the years. I haven't been there in a few years, but I've been there, you know, over 20 times.
Right.
And started going when I was 17. But yeah, I mean, the roads, the conditions of people's houses. And I think capitalism is playing a major role in bringing a better quality of life,
right,
even to the poorest of the world. They have cell phones and a way to communicate now. They can see the outside world.
Yeah, once you remove an authoritarian like Duvalier.
Yeah, and so, you know, you remove that veil like you have here between your podcast studio and the kitchen.
This is a multi-million dollar studio, sir. And,
you know, so people can communicate and they can learn English and, you know, through Facebook Messenger and things like that. I think I've seen their quality of life get at least twice. I mean,
in the last 10 years.
Last 10 years, way better than it used to be. Because, I mean, the average cell phone is just a few dollars a month or whatever down there. And I was surprised when I went there.
They have Cricket?
No, their speed. Yeah, come on. Their speed is much faster even than ours in some places, like 4G. Jeez. Yeah, so it's great.
Well, it's not how it's supposed to be. We're America. Gosh darn it. So they're following.
More proof that the FCC sucks.
Yes. So to Harry's point, they're falling behind on oil production. We've had innovations in fracking and shale, so we've become a net oil exporter. With government control of their energy department, Venezuela oversees gathering oil, and they have not yet explored either of these advancements. And they've had declining in barrels of oil since 2000. Now, the places that have oil have always been government land, for lack of a better word. It was always public land because these are places that nobody ever lived. So it wasn't necessarily a public, a private property paradise to begin with. So it's always kind of been in the government's control. And obviously the governments there have fought over these resources. Now you move on to the population declining. So leaving Venezuela unannounced is illegal. Over 3 million of them have managed to escape. With so much of their population leaving, declining, or having record number of infants die at childbirth, the debt can no longer comfortably expand based on population. Most citizens, knowing that most infants will starve to death, have stopped having kids, which is a very troubling and sad realization. So let's move on to the coup and give you some notes on the coup. So the incumbent president is Nicolas Maduro. He was appointed essentially on the death of Chavez when he died of cancer. He was his chosen successor. He narrowly won victory in 2013. And he is supported by Russia, China, Iran, Turkey, Cuba, Mexico, and the UN. So a real killer's row of model world citizens there. Russia especially backs Maduro because he sells them a lot of weapons, including two nuclear bombers. These two bombers that Russia just delivered to them have nuclear capabilities, is what I'm trying to say. Ouster Juan Guaido is supported by Canada, the U.S., the U.K., Brazil, Peru, Chile, and Argentina. In a nutshell, under the Constitution of Venezuela, the President of the National Assembly may step in as president temporarily in the middle of a controversy over who should be the president. Maduro's election was seen as rigged, and even the UN that backs Maduro states the election was a sham. This is all still based on his 2013 election. He's slated for a new election in 2013. So he was originally elected in 2013, and then a few months ago he won a recall vote. Undercover researchers found in the, quote, In the Venezuelan case, where the current president was elected by plurality voting, the systematic distortion of voting behavior in small electoral units was outcome determinative. So, essentially, this examination found that rural areas with less oversight were using intimidation and fraud to sway the vote. Outcome determinative is a fancy way of saying it changed the result. So it was basically a sham election that got him elected in the first place in 2013, and especially in that referendum. The legislative body swore Guaido in as president on the 23rd of January until an investigation could be completed. The constitutional starting date for the president and for all of these legislators was January 10th. Maduro has refused to allow the matter to be investigated. Now, as we have said, he's arrested 700 people who are protesting or involved in the opposition party in just the last couple of weeks, and 36 people have been killed in Venezuela, which is not something that has actually been highlighted by a lot of people, but is of note to begin with. Any other comments? I want to stop there just so if you want to interrupt.
Okay, I'll interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead, Elena. Ladies first.
When I was talking to my aunt about this, and she's from Venezuela, she was like, she was just really sad because she's saying that a lot of the people that are getting killed are like teenagers or young people too. And like, when I was replying to her, I was like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. And she's like, it's not just crazy, Alina, it's sad. Like, right. Children are dying.
Right.
And just like, I think that you forget what that's like. Where we live, we're just so fortunate that we don't, these things are just stories that we're reading. Like, these things are just, we're just being informed about other people and what they're going through. Like, we're not going through something like this. And so I feel like when we look at it, it's more of like, we're looking at facts and we're trying to read statistics and we forget that these are just humans. And
yeah,
no matter why this is happening or how this is happening, like, people are losing their lives. And children are losing their lives.
Yeah, people who, you look at Antifa, it's mostly young people because people are attracted to fighting, young people especially are attracted to fighting power. So it's obviously going to be a lot of younger people because they're the ones who feel like they have absolutely no hope, no future, mm-hmm. because they have no roots. Harry, what were you going to say?
Okay. I want to go back to the point when they were talking about the nuclear capable bombers. Let's look at that, because that was like a lot of buzzword. That's a lot of like scare tactic. Like, this is what's going on in Venezuela. What in reality, Russia sent them two junky, you know, air crap from the Soviet Union era junk. It's like, some of the stuff we got out back. No, that's what they sent them.
I don't know if you know that for a fact, but the Reuters article that I read, Russia has supplied them with a bunch of planes and bombers, and Maduro had a military parade on Sunday to show off a lot of this new equipment that he's bought, that Russia has sold to them.
Yeah, and I see that, but like the nuclear capable, you have to have a nuke to even like, it's basically like this thing has the capability of putting one on the plane and delivering it. But all of those things were developed in like the 70s and the 80s. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Russia hasn't gone out and actually built new nuclear aircraft. They haven't done that.
Right.
So the United States really haven't either.
Okay.
So the new aircrafts are, they're probably newer tech, but like United States is still selling and flying FA-16 and stuff like that. Yeah. Not giving people F-22s.
All right, let's talk about America's interest, and then we're gonna wrap up and kind of give a little bit of analysis on this. So, America's interest. So essentially, risking our status with the UN is of concern to the American government. And let's be honest, Hody, our researcher, writes, we financed terrorist groups and usurpers before, and the UN didn't do anything last time. The United States have given financial support to the permanent presidency of Guaido. America helped create part of the crisis to begin with by placing sanctions and trade restrictions on Venezuela and doubled down today on sanctions against their main source of income. Essentially, they put sanctions on Citgo, and then they have to pay at the borders. And so all of the money goes into a locked account, essentially. And so the United States government is not going to give that money to Maduro. They're going to hold on to it. Maduro has tried to get his gold, all of the nation's resources from the Bank of England, the country of Britain, the United Kingdom, basically said it's up to the Bank of England what they'd like to do with the money. And there have been a lot of different countries placing sanctions on Venezuela just in the last week, trying to make sure that if he flees, he doesn't take all the money with him, like Gaddafi or some of these other guys have done. You know, when they leave the power of their country, they take all of the resources or the gold with them. I think Mubarak had done that in Egypt. And so that's a lot of what the sanctions are about at the moment. So like Honduras, the U.S. regulated their trade and when they collapsed, installed someone friendly to U.S. interests. If you want to hear about another instance, go to Honduras. And you will in the Wall Dailies, we did an episode on Honduras because that's where a lot of the caravan was coming from, remember? Well, why is that happening? Because the United States created several different economic situations that would collapse a regime, install someone friendly, and then things turn into a civil war. And that's certainly an outcome that could happen here. Now, a Colombian drone attempted to kill Maduro in 2018. Now, he immediately believed the U.S. government was behind the attack. Secretary of State Pompeo denied our involvement. With both sides spewing lies on every other issue, the listener can decide what really happened, and nobody really knows. Some said the military tried to kill him, Colombia tried to kill him, the United States tried to kill him, but it definitely escalated the tensions between U.S. and Venezuela. Now, Alina, did you personally try to kill Maduro? Was this your drone? I think she's frozen.
I was.
I thought you died.
She was like,
oh no, they poisoned her.
What did you say?
We were talking about this Colombian drone that tried to kill Maduro last year.
She's frozen.
She's frozen again. All right, we'll move on.
Yeah.
It's classified information, clearly. Clearly,
the Colombian government has gotten to her phone. The Trump administration has its eye on Venezuela. From a golf course, Trump casually has mentioned a military option to get rid of him. Rex Tillerson used to say he looked favorably on an ouster for Maduro. Getting Guaido in might mean avoiding an election, which means a U.S. ally for the foreseeable future in that country. And the Trump administration has already threatened to sanction anybody who might run against Guaido and win. Now, here's the thing about when it comes to Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. And I mean, Venezuela has always been the thorn in the side of the U.S. government when it comes to the Monroe Doctrine. A big reason why Hugo Chavez came to power, he was a very charismatic person, but his message was the World Bank and the IMF and the United States government and their banks and the UN, they come into these African and South American countries, they take our resources, they give us these bullcrap loans, and they basically subjugate our people, take our resources, and keep us poor. And I am going to take the resources that we are blessed with in Venezuela and fight the devil, the United States. You hear a lot of this rhetoric taking place in Venezuela at the moment. See, the devil's coming in trying to usurp us. This is imperialism. They're doing it again. Maduro is setting up a choice for the military because Guaido is saying to the military, don't kill your fellow citizens. I order you not to fire. Maduro is saying, you either are with us or against us. You are either a traitor, and when we win this, we will punish you, or you're with us, the military, because they have been set up with a set of financial incentives. They are all behind Maduro. So the military, this isn't like Colombia, for example, where you have an army and you have the FARC. You don't have two military powers in the country of Venezuela. You have the military, and it's a pretty robust military, and it's certainly not a military that the United States would want to get into a fight with. And I don't think that, despite what John Bolton's pad said, where it said 5,000 troops in Colombia, I don't know that he necessarily meant that he was going to put 5,000 American troops in Colombia. Basically, this photo was taken of Bolton, and he had his yellow pad towards the cameras, and written on it said 5,000 troops in Colombia. Well, that could mean 5,000 Colombian troops. That could mean 5,000 American troops. That could mean 5,000 UN peacekeepers. Who knows what that might mean? He says that that was just a misunderstanding, which means that it's probably United States troops, and he's trying to cover his ass. So there's a lot of different variables, and part of the problem is that when the United States starts picking winners, like they're doing with Guaido, and people in the government, even Bernie Sanders, start lining up behind the challenger, what that does to the people in those countries is it gives them a boost. And they all think that the United States will commit troops. This happened in Syria. This has happened in almost every country. As I have been an adult and watching this, I have noticed that the United States morally gets behind a Guaido, and that leads the people in the country that are with Guaido to think that the United States will have their back at all costs, including military intervention. So they get really far ahead of themselves, and then the United States doesn't deliver on it. Their morale collapses, and then the Maduros clamp down tighter. People have poked their head out of the sand. They start getting decapitated, literally and figuratively. Mm-hmm. And then the situation just becomes even worse and even bloodier because the United States has tried to pick a winner. That is a serious problem with this. Obviously, no one looks at this situation. That's why I was absolutely stunned by what I heard on the Scott Horton show when I hear someone like McAdams basically saying, you know, Maduro's the duly elected president of Venezuela. How dare we? And he's kind of like in a veiled way supporting Maduro, even though it's not what he was doing, but it comes across that way. But there's always like this weird thing with the Ron Paul show right now where it's like, Russia's not bad, China's not bad. You know, McAdams in this interview basically said, well, China and Russia say the election was fine, so it's disputed at best. And I sit there going, China and Russia are you believe China and Russia over the United States government? Like, I don't know what you're drinking, man, but like, I believe my government's corrupt, but I don't see a morally superior China and Russia.
No.
So I think we're falling into a trap where like we are so against military intervention that we're tiptoeing into saying Maduro's okay, and that is absolutely not a morally defensible position in any way, shape, or form. When you look at what has happened in Venezuela, and I'm sure you guys agree, there's no way that you can look at what Maduro has done and how he has acted and see anything other than an absolute corrupt, murderous authoritarian who needs to go. Now, should we be involved in that? That's for the listener to decide. I say no, because we mess it up worse. But I don't think that Maduro is somebody that you should ever even in a veiled way, try to say is a legitimate person to rule over people.
No. I think we're going to leave a vacuum there, and Guido's not going to be the guy that fills it. It's going to be probably a worse dictator than what they have now, you know, because I think the economic situation is going to get worse before it gets better. And whoever fills that spot is going to, ultimately is going to be left holding the bag, so to speak. So
to speak. Harry?
Yeah, well, the other thing is how can I put this? Hugo Chavez's daughter has already like exited the country a while back with millions of money and have already raided that place.
Right.
So the places already have been looted. You know, it's sad to watch it keep happening because it's just this slow death that has just been spiraling around, just watching Venezuela just circle the drain for what it seems like, seven years now? I feel like it's been like 7 years. I've been watching like all the crap show of Venezuela for to a decade of just watching it go down.
So there was an article in Cato today that kind of Juan Carlos Hidalgo made a point This is a really good article with five misconceptions about what's going on. You know, and one of the points, one of the misconceptions, quote, the opposition is encouraging the armed forces to launch a coup. He writes, the coup took place years ago and it was carried out by Maduro with the active involvement of the armed forces. In 2017, Maduro installed a puppet constituent assembly, subverting the requirements established in the Constitution. Since then, that assembly has taken away all the powers of the legitimately elected National Assembly. The Supreme Court is under such complete control of the regime that since 2005 it hasn't once ruled against the executive. What the opposition is encouraging is for the armed forces to act in accordance to the Constitution. So this writer at the Cato Institute is basically saying, this isn't about inciting a coup, this is about fighting a coup. And then he goes on to basically say that nations have a legitimate right to recognize the legitimate government that they're going to deal with. It doesn't necessarily mean that the United States diplomatically is staging a coup. It means that they're going to talk to the people that are more legitimate, and that is Guaido, in this writer's opinion, than Maduro.
True, because like Maduro has done several different things in the last, like you said, like 2 or 3 years against the written constitution of Venezuela to keep himself in power and to give himself more power, and he actually elected separate different like, of his own like his own special government. I believe we talked about that it was last year actually when Maduro did enact his own Senate basically.
Yeah.
I forget what episode that is, but yes, we talked about that last year.
Right.
And it's just like I said, it's so this new government and everyone's really like it's kind of like so since he did this, crossed his own constitution, they seem more legitimate at that point.
Right. Alina, what do you think?
Well, I'm just thinking about like the comments of being like when you say you don't think that the US should help. And I don't know how I feel about that, but whenever you guys say like, oh, that country's already looted, it almost makes me think like, oh, we don't have anything to gain from it, and so then it's not even worth helping. And it kind of, I don't know, I feel like that's a really bad message to put out there, because at the end of the day, the way I see it, it's just these are people and we see these people suffering, and like if I personally could do something to help, I would want to, if that makes sense. Like when you say it's going to get worse, so do we just watch? Like,
well, let me go, Harry, because here's where I look at this, and I even said in a group chat the other day, I go, this is when it's a shitty time to be a libertarian, because this is one of those times where your principles conflict with exactly what you're talking about, Alina. Where you want to do something, you want to help. And so I don't hold these beliefs because I'm selfish and I don't want us to do something because I don't think that it will that helping doesn't benefit us. I look at it in the way that you look at the track record of success. Helping has been the problem in a lot of ways. When you look at these 41 different, there was a Colombian professor, I'd have to look this up real quick, but he basically outlined the 41 different, let me just look at this real quick.
All right. Well, it's the same thing with the American Revolution when they fought off their oppressive regime. They did get help from the French, but the French only did it because do a gigantic middle finger to the English. And
yeah, so John H. Coatsworth wrote an article. I'll put it in the show notes, United States Interventions. And Coatsworth basically is this Columbia professor, that Columbia University professor, that outlined the 41 different interventions that the United States has instituted. And when you look at the track record of the United States intervening in South America, it hasn't been very successful, and we tend to make things worse. It's just like I was talking about a little bit ago, where when you are, as a nation, not going to follow through on the things that you promise to these opposition parties, you end up getting them slaughtered. The United States is so divided politically, especially after Iraq, that the stomach is not there nationally to take on more responsibility in other countries, A, because we can't really afford it at this point, and B, because we don't feel like we're helping. Like, at what level do you intervene in another nation? I don't have... When I look at this situation, if the surface of information that we have in front of our face is just that we have accepted a new set of diplomats from a country while they're working out their constitutional issues, then I don't necessarily have a problem with the president accepting a new delegation, right? If the CIA is currently in Venezuela and propping up someone who is going to be Pinochet, you know, Chile is a great example. The United States propped up this right-wing dictator in Chile that started throwing people out of his opposition out of helicopters. So Aaron's in favor of that, but
just joking.
So part of the argument that people like Chavez have had is that when the United States has supported opposition in Latin American countries, we're choosing the right wing people who are just enriching the elite in that country, and they're doing nothing for the people. They're not actually supporting the Democrats in those, and I don't mean the Democratic Party, but the people who believe in democracy in those countries. We're supporting people who become dictators. And so by the United States helping, we've made a lot of bad choices. And so I think that's why, from an American standpoint, there's a lot of hesitation on my part to say, let's get involved, because our government picks really bad people for countries like your home country. You know, we're not good at helping other countries. If you look at Iraq, if you look at Egypt, if you look at Libya, if you look at Afghanistan, the track record of America, quote unquote, helping is not very good. And at some point, it has to be up to... It's just amazing to see all these people who are mad about Russia interfering in our election, screaming for us to intervene in the affairs of other countries. Like, I don't know if that really resonates with you, Alina, but that's why I look at it, because I agree with you. Like, you look at people suffering and you go, I want to help them. But having studied how we help them, we tend to put people in power that benefit the United States government and not the people of those countries.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah. Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, if this is like your first time hearing about what's happening in Venezuela, I would hope that your first reaction is like sympathy and like feeling bad for these people, and not necessarily to like sit there and think of like, oh, well, they did this wrong and this is happening to them because
they're socialists. And
like, yeah. And like, it's really easy to just point fingers and be like, oh, it's this person's fault, or they did it because they did this wrong. When at the end of the day, they're just people. And, I don't know, like,
no, I get exactly what you're saying. And let me give you an illustration. When I listen to libertarian podcasts about this subject, it's a lot of smirky.
The human element is removed.
Right. Yeah. It's smirky cliches about how libertarians are morally superior on these issues.
And we told you so.
We told you so. Yeah. And there isn't really a lot of empathy for the people there. I think it's a great point that libertarians a lot of times miss.
Yeah, and you could have your empathy, and like I said, I've been watching the situation, you know, and so it's hard not to say, like, oh, see, look, it's finally happening. But you did touch on the one point that Venezuela's last great resource right now is its people. Its people are highly educated, highly motivated to do things. That is the best resource Venezuela has right now. They have set up tons of different factories. A lot of people know how to work these machines. That what they need is the capital investment from a capitalist system to go back and invest and get them to diversify the economy. That's what's holding them back. So right. I don't want you to think that when I say that place was looted, it was looted monetarily. That's what I'm talking about. But for people, the human element that's there, that's the richest thing that they have. Because the Coca-Cola bottle, there's a huge, massive Coca-Cola bottling company plant in Venezuela. It's huge. It's massive. Tons of equipment and machines are there, but it's inoperable right now because the Venezuelan government took it over.
Alina?
Yeah, I don't know. I just, like, maybe it just makes me feel different just because, like, I know people there. Mm-hmm. And, like, I have a hard time just separating this as just another story that's going to come and go just because I have been seeing it for years. And I, like, even though it's, like, not necessarily immediate family, but, like, even if my family's affected, I feel like it's affecting me as well. And so I'm not saying, like, I have the answers and, like, this is what we should do. Like I said, when I first started talking, it's, like, I'm not saying that I think we should go in or we shouldn't go in. Like, I haven't made up my mind. I just, like, especially, like, talking to this group of libertarians, like you said, sometimes I feel like they forget that they're humans. And, like, I'm not saying that I don't like to joke because, like, I feel like I don't. I'm, like, trying to be serious. But at the
Alina,
same time, like,
Alina and I would never kill ourselves, but our favorite are suicide memes.
So, but, like, it's just easy to just talk about this for a little bit and then make memes and then make jokes and then just forget about it because it's not affecting our day to day.
Next thing up on the news cycle and right. Yeah. Filter it out and
because
the next.
First I've had a lot of people come up to me and be like, oh, what's happening, like, what just happened in Venezuela? I think it's because it hasn't been talked about in the United States, like, for the U.S. and for most people, like, this is the first time they're hearing about it, but it's been going on. Like,
I think it's a great point and a great reminder. And it's something that we always try to keep in mind. When you hear things in the news that's happening to real people, like even Judge Kavanaugh, or Roger Stone, like people who are the villain in the news cycle, like they're human beings with emotions and feelings. And so, like, what must they be feeling? Or, you know, the people of Venezuela, like, oh, look at those idiots who chose socialism. Look, haha, don't you get. But, like, there's reasons why everybody makes the choices that they make. And a lot of times, I mean, we have our biggest group of people that support We Are Libertarians on our Facebook page are soldiers. Veterans are the number one job of people that like the We Are Libertarians Facebook page. You know why? It's because those people have had to have these conversations, and they're the ones who are actually fighting the wars, and they're the ones who are dealing with the mm-hmm. government, and they're the ones who, like, were 18 or 19 in a crummy financial situation and signed up for the military and got in there and realized what a cluster it was. And then somewhere along the line fell out of the scales fell from their eyes and they started to go, there has to be a better way. They find libertarianism. And then those people just go, I don't know that the libertarians, I believe the things that they believe, but man, when I see the dead soldier memes, I don't know that I can be with these people. You know,
those are the black and yellow.
No, it's not, man. It's really? it's so much more. It's so many more libertarians. Like, if you see the people who, like, there's one guy that I really think is funny and has good memes, but he puts up a dead cop meme about once a day, and you just go, dude.
Yeah.
You're not winning hearts and minds. You're just taking somebody who could be an ally if you talk to them.
Yeah, it's like, who hurt you?
Right. Like, I mean, the Free Talk Live guys in Keene, New Hampshire started meeting with the police officers in their local town and over a series of coffee dates convinced most of the police department to quit.
Yeah.
because they talked to them like they were human beings. So I don't think that it's necessarily that you live and breathe it and that makes you different, Alina. I think it's that you just gave us a really good reminder that you should approach every story with empathy and realize, like, the Venezuelans, and every time you post one of those memes and you kind of joke about it, realize that there are real people who are starving and, you know, there has to be some sort of resolution for those people.
Yeah.
So, and that's the hardest part, I think, because you look at this and you go, I don't want this socialist robbing these people and taking them over. So you want to do something. You want to help.
Exactly.
You know, your empathy is triggered. And I think a lot of people go, well, military intervention or propping up another regime, that's the thing to do. But at the end of the day, you have to look at the results of that. And that's not the most empathetic thing you can do because it just brings more misery for these people. Like, it sucks. It's one of the hardest things about being a libertarian is accepting that. Go ahead, Harry.
I was going to say, and how did socialism get to Venezuela? Another white European trying to help somebody? That's how socialism got there. Okay.
No, it's true.
People going down there to help.
Well, that's a big reason why you saw Marxism and the USSR, the Soviets basically started taking over, you know, Asian countries and basically populations of color. Let's put it that way, across the globe. The reason that they turned to the Soviets is because it was a natural counterbalance to colonialism, to imperialism. And so neo-imperialism, when we're using the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, look up the John Perkins book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, that's just a new version of it. You know, you take a country like Nigeria or Venezuela and you loan them to build infrastructure. You loan them all this money to build infrastructure, and then they can't afford to pay the loans back, and then all of a sudden they're just basically slaves to these payments. So
I think Maduro's henchmen are at the door.
Honestly, go lock the door, please. There's somebody's knocking at the door, Harry. We're not even live streaming.
Uh-oh. Here it comes. I bet it's Aaron.
Battery ram.
He legitimately thinks that we should call the police every time we live stream.
Why?
Because if we start a live stream, Alina, then someone might prank us and send they'll say that we have drugs here, and then they'll have a SWAT team kill us.
Now they will, for sure.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Now they will.
Harry.
I like how he says us. I like how he says the word, the cops will kill us. Okay. I like how he says that.
Well, I'm harboring a known African-American, so.
You know,
Harry was laughing at that. Let the record state that he had muted his channel and he was laughing. Unmute yourself so people know that that was a joke.
Okay, fine.
Making me look racist. I'm not racist. I have a black friend and a Colombian friend, right, Alina?
Very diverse.
Very diverse. And Aaron, he's got hillbilly genes.
Strong Appalachian roots.
Oh my gosh. Alina, he got back on keto. He lost 20 pounds in a week. He went to CrossFit once and got six pack. That's how aggressive his hillbilly genes are.
Yeah. Well, it was just, you know, quit the Bush Light. I guess if you don't drink like 12 to 14 a day.
If you don't drink 778,000 beers a year.
Yeah, it was a lot. Yeah, I don't know how much it was, but it was a lot.
And my IRA has taken a huge hit, by the way.
Yeah, he was vested in Anheuser-Busch, AmBev.
I was going to retire at 42, only a few more years ago.
Hey.
All right, so.
You know what a dirty rack of Bush Light is?
How much?
It's a bushel. It's called a bushel.
No, I'm turning your mic off. That's enough. No more jokes.
Unmute.
No. That's awful.
No. They didn't even recognize.
Write that one down.
Alina, you didn't even recognize that was a joke, did you?
Nope.
No. It was that bad, Aaron.
I'm sorry. It can't all be zingers.
I laugh at a lot of stuff, so that's right. Saying.
Yeah, Aaron's much.
I think you hit the mute button, honestly.
Aaron's much funnier than this. You are Tad Western's cousin.
Yeah, I am.
And the misery in that family has produced two very funny individuals.
Misery?
Your family.
What makes people funny?
Yeah, humor is misery distilled.
Sure.
Now, all right, so what do we do about this? I look at it and I go, at this point, this is a constitutional argument between these various groups. We have a constitutional argument taking place right now with Donald Trump. What if the Russians, the Chinese, the European Union, Venezuela, Colombia all said, we don't recognize Donald Trump as the legitimately elected president because of Russian interference, and we recognize Nancy Pelosi as the president? Would that not be destabilizing for the world? Now, for some reason, we think, oh, that'll never happen. But in a lot of ways, that is kind of what is happening here from a political level. And so I ask the three of you, should we get involved in the constitutional argument of another country, or should we allow them to work this out?
I think the founders' admonition says peace, trade, and commerce with all nations and entangling alliances with none.
Okay, whipping out some Washington on us.
Yeah. The founders' admonition. Advice.
Alina, so how do you think we should approach this?
I honestly have no idea. Like, I don't think that just doing nothing is the right thing to do. But I don't necessarily feel like, oh, we should invade and try and take over and do all of that.
Right. More of a wait and see.
I think if it's possible to, like, help the people, like, even if it's just, like, food and stuff like that, maybe. I really don't know.
Yeah.
But I feel like being like, oh no, this isn't our problem, may not be what I feel is right.
I know it's unfair to ask you to come up with a solution to a world crisis when you've had 3 hours to think about it. So don't worry. But you brought a lot to the discussion that I thought was very very empathetic, which is what you're good at. You're usually good at trying to make me more of a human. It's hard. Harry, what do you think?
See, I think we should get in an argument, not the United States, but the human beings, and let them understand that the biggest problem all this is government, and that they don't need one, and they should just toss it off and just not look back and just keep going forward. Yeah, I said it. Yeah, that's what I said.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just letting it marinate a little bit. You know, Alina, you got to let it marinate.
Yes.
Yes. You know, all right. So
we're going to who robbed from them? The government.
That's right. It's just the people upstairs.
Who got people on live television and fired people? The government did.
Our neighbors upstairs are either humping or
something's going on.
Or they're moving or
both.
They're annoyed that I'm talking so loud. They said, we just think you listen to the radio on Tuesday nights. But it's very distracting. It's very loud. I don't think you can hear it, but it's loud.
Sound like a broomstick on the floor.
It probably telling me to shut up. But he's pretty cool. He drew a dick on my car. So.
Oh, that was who did it?
Yeah. So I walked out one morning, and we had like a foot of snow on our cars. And I just was wiping it with a big broom. And I almost wiped it off, and I saw this dick on my car, and I took a photo and, you know, said, my car's been vandalized again. Everyone laughed.
At least it had wheels.
Exactly right. It's going to be negative 11 tomorrow, so hopefully it starts. But
the old cock bandit struck again.
He barely has wheels, that Fiat that he drives around.
Harry, you drive a 1983 Subaru. Shut up.
It is a 93 Subaru Estate vehicle. It's a legacy estate.
It looks like something James Neese drives.
He right now he's driving a Sebring, just like you.
You know what? I'm going to do a daily on the shutdown. Do we want to talk about the shutdown? We're long into the episode. What do you guys think? Should we keep going, or should I just do this as a daily?
We can pause and record the daily.
Now you're thinking.
Yeah.
Now you're thinking. All right. That way Alina doesn't have to stick around and be bored with us. She's young, and she's got to get out on the town and do young people things.
It's too cold to do young people things. I'm already in my PJs.
Oh, okay. You're kind of an old lady anyways.
I am an old lady.
Yeah.
Well, she does have PJs, so yeah.
All right, cool.
Long sleeve is too cold.
All right, so final thoughts for the episode. Aaron, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. It was good to come back. Glad you had me. I'm glad we didn't have to get the tape down that you bought.
I bought years ago this tape.
In preparation for my next.
That just says, shut up. Because when Aaron would come on, it's just a low murmur of nonsense.
Well, I was drinking back then.
A lot. Yeah, you were very
two-hearted.
You're very good tonight.
Yeah, I was drinking two-hearted ale with your former partner, and
former lover.
Oh,
no, I'm just kidding.
But no, it's good to come back on and get the creative juices flowing again, and I hope you'll have me soon.
Yeah, please mop that up. Absolutely. Alina, let's give you the final thoughts.
On today?
On Venezuela, on anything. You can talk about whatever you want.
No, then I'll be here forever. I don't know. I think it's really important for just people to like realize what's happening. Like, I'm glad I was able to help in some way.
Your mom was very concerned that that this would tip the balance.
Yeah. No, she came. She called me when she was at work, first of all. And then she was like, I need you to send me the link to the radio. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she was like, your thing that you're doing. I was like, first of all, it's not on the radio. Second of all, if I send you a link, you're not even going to know how to open it. And then she was like, oh, no, you have to have your aunt call in. And I was like, okay, well, she lives in California. Like, this is too last minute. This isn't going to work. She was like, Alina, you have to. This is going to reach millions of people, and it's going to decide the fate of the country. And I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that this is what was happening today.
She said that to me. I was very flattered.
She was like, call Chris right now. And then you didn't answer, and she was like, oh, my gosh. I don't know what she said to you because she left my room, so I don't know what she said.
Well, it was very awkward. She answers. She's like, hello. I'm like, hello.
Yeah, she was like talking all nice to you, and she was like screaming at me before.
I know. I was worried that I was going to get the chocolclava.
Yeah.
You got it wrong again.
I know. And I don't speak Spanish, Baxter. And so she goes, how are you? I'm well. I am well as well. Indeed. Like, she said indeed at one point. It was very cute. And then she told me about your aunt, and I was like, yeah, she'd be great if you can get her in like the next 30. Because here's the thing. She has like a big degree and like is Venezuelan, and she's a normal person. Like,
yeah.
I can have you on here, and you'll hang with her nonsense. But like somebody like that, I'd want to do a formal interview. I don't want to subject them to like an hour and a half conversation of nonsense. Like you, I don't mind, because
she made me feel very good about myself after she talked about my aunt.
Right. You're not qualified to do this.
Yeah, that's what she was like saying. She was like, you don't know anything.
To give her mom some credit, I was listening to the Young Turks podcast on the way over here, and listening to their opinion about Venezuela, and they're very worried about libertarian ideas affecting this situation.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they basically are blaming us. They are very worried that we're going to swing them into a right-wing dictatorship, and that business is going to take over the country, you know, based on our Cato Institute and different think tanks.
These people are out of their mind. Like the left, the socialists in this country just cannot come to terms with the fact that socialist governments fail and starve people to death. Like
they would not admit any fault towards socialism at all. It's all because of big business, and we are controlling, somehow libertarians are controlling the oil prices just so that our narrative that socialism sucks will come true.
That's insane.
And I only listened to like 20 minutes on the way over here, the first part of the podcast. And so it was like not the last podcast, but if you go back maybe two, labeled something to do with Venezuela, and you'll hear all about their crazy Alex Jones type theories.
Literally, it's insanity. Like, you would think that, like, much to Alina's point, if you've watched Jericho, and there's a scene where eventually the military rolls into Jericho, and you're filled with such relief for these people. Like, I would love to have that. I would love to be able to say, like, yes, we should send in the military and save these people and invade this country for their own good. But the results are what the results are. Like, you have to at some point have to look at the consequences to your ideas and go, this thing that I feel would work isn't actually going to produce the results I want. And I don't get how people on the left just don't seem to have that ability. Mm-hmm. Like, you just can't see that. And I'm not talking about like your liberal who looks at the Constitution and says, I think we should emphasize civil rights. Like, I'm talking about the Young Turk type people who just cannot see, like Ocasio-Cortez just cannot see Venezuela and realize that the Green New Deal would do much the same thing. It's bizarre.
No matter how well intended your ideas are, if the
the consequences to the
if they don't come to fruition, then you need to admit where you're wrong and,
right.
and look for facts. You know, and they look right past the facts.
Facts don't care about your feelings. So, Lena, we don't want to interrupt your, but yes, I thought it was very funny. Your mom politely said. Millions of people could hear this, and so it's important we get someone who's qualified to do it.
Yeah, and she also had a solution for it all. Like, she said that she's like, I don't understand why it's so difficult, why we can't just send someone to just kill the guy and be done with all of this. She's like, if the U.S. won't do it, we should just call the mafia in Colombia, and they'll take care of it.
If we're only so simple.
That's like my first sensible thing to do, because I definitely have the mafia on speed dial.
She like, wanted you to call the mafia.
Yeah, she made it seem like she was going to do it if I didn't do it.
Your mom. I love your mom.
No, you can have her.
For every Chavez, there's a Maduro, though. And you get rid of Maduro, there's someone else waiting.
It's a great point.
You create a vacuum, and it's you don't know who that vacuum's going to be filled by.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get rid of Saddam Hussein, and now you've got ISIS controlling Iraq.
Exactly.
You know, so, your well-intended ideas and always don't produce such great consequences.
Exactly.
And there's
right.
blowback to deal with.
Yeah, there's a political power structure in place, and you get rid of one person, it doesn't mean that the whole structure collapses. You know, there are very few regimes like Russia where Putin is the central figurehead. But even if you got rid of Putin, a Medvedev or whatever would pop up. I mean, you look at Iraq, where you had Saddam Hussein. You get rid of Saddam Hussein, and you still have the ruling factions from the Hussein era getting, you know, fighting with the other different factions of Iraq. So, all right. Any final thoughts, Alina? Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. All right. Harry?
Correct. Just to sum up what you guys are saying, the power vacuum is a real thing, and going in to help with the best intentions, but sometimes you've got to let them do their own thing and sit back. And I'm not saying like it does stink when you think about it, like sit back and not really sit back and watch, but you just got to be, you can't go in there with guns. You got to be in there with coming in with humanitarianism and compassion, because you've got to let them do their own thing. If they're going to get on the back on the world stage and become the powerhouse of South America again, they've got to do it on their own and not with any help from anyone from, you know, from Europe or North America. They've got to do it on their own.
Well, at what point, Harry, does strategic support play a role, though? So that is the question that I would ask listeners, and I'd love to hear thoughts about it, too. At what point now, strategic support gets messy, right? So when you look why is ISIS driving around in brand new Toyotas? Well, the strategic support that went to the rebels ended up in the hands of ISIS.
They're very reliable.
Correct. We need to keep Toyota at bay. Let them have Nissans and Chevy trucks, so they'll break down. Okay.
So
none of these reliable trucks.
But what about lending legitimacy in this particular case, just lending legitimacy and raising the issue of this 35-year-old Guaido by acknowledging his delegation over Maduro? Like, at what's the level of strategic support?
You can what you allow is the businesses to find out if it's legitimate or not. If they're legitimate, businesses will invest. Allow the market to do that. Allow businesses to do that, because if it's stable enough for Coca-Cola to reopen that plant, and the person who's in charge of the government, you know, is going to allow Coca-Cola to do what they do best and make money and bring in jobs and do everything in that economy, then, you know, that's who you let the businesses support those people that are there. I think, honestly, I think the government is just in the way, and it will ham fist and make this process worse. As they get involved, they're making it worse, so people can't leave that situation, or preventing other people to go into that situation to help on their own. I think the government should just get out of the damn way.
Yeah, maybe some of the people that are actually creating jobs and opportunities and money and capital will come back. You know, they're in Miami right now and they're in Colombia and they've moved all their resources out of the country because of the crazy socialist tax rates and things. And maybe they'll start to move back. I mean, they have to have some sort of sense of pride about their country of origin, and they most likely want to live there, but their government has made it impossible.
Yeah, I think I think Alina can speak to that. I mean, you feel very, I mean, I imagine it has to be confusing or odd sometimes, because I'm fully American. I don't, you know, World War One and World War Two scraped all the Germany out of my lineage. So, like, I don't identify as a German American. I don't have pride in Germany. I don't have any connection to my home country. But you know, you were born in Colombia. You go there. You have family there, and you took me to a Colombian event. I can only describe it as an event here in Indianapolis. It was a lot of fun. It was so great because you just see people who are fully Colombian and fully American at both the same time.
Did you get to salsa?
I did not dance. Alina was too busy. Huh?
It was raining the whole time.
Yeah, but that didn't stop people. And let me tell you, people were great dancers, and I fell in love like three times. But, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of Venezuelans who want to go back to Venezuela.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's very few people that if they had to leave their home country that they just left without being sad at all. I think that people forget that part too. Like, if someone's choosing to leave their home country, they're not just being like, oh, I'm just going to move out of town. Like, you're leaving your place of birth. You're leaving where your family's from, where you grew up, what you know, the language you speak, the customs you know, and you're moving all that. Like, so I don't think that's like a light issue. So I would assume people want to go back. They've just made it impossible right now.
Yeah, the incentive to move and the hardship is greater than staying where you're at.
Yeah.
You know,
correct. And it's the same thing we saw when Katrina happened. A lot of those people were like, I want to go back to New Orleans. I want to fix it. So let's.
Yeah, absolutely. I think immigration, people don't understand that the flow of people is the same as the flow of capital. I mean, when a place is free and healthy, people flow into it. And when it's unhealthy, people flow out of it. That's why they're going to Colombia. The conditions in Colombia are safer. You're not going to get killed. You can eat. You know, one of the videos I watched, it was a month's salary for a hot dog. Like, you had to work a whole month to get one hot dog. Like, that's how bad the economic conditions in Venezuela are. In Honduras, in Guatemala, in El Salvador, that's why people are coming here. Because it's a month's salary to afford a single meal that's not even all that nutritious. Like, people don't make the journey in these caravans to come to the United States because they just want to commit crimes and rape white women. Like, they come here because they can't afford to live or survive in their home countries, and they're going to a place where they know, I have a better shot of survival if I go to the United States and even if I deal with immigration.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Alina, your family, you're a naturalized citizen, but your family came here for economic opportunity at a time when Colombia was not great.
Yeah. I mean, we were very fortunate in the sense that my dad found a job here, and he's an engineer. His job helped tremendously in that whole process, as in, like, they paid all the fees. They helped with getting a lawyer, and even then, even I feel like my family's case was the best case scenario, and it still took years and it still took a lot of work. Yeah. And I feel very fortunate because I don't share that story. Like, that's not a common story.
Yeah. I'm fortunate that Alina was in Colombia during the children separation incident. And at the same, because she would have flown to Washington and ripped off her chacala.
Chancla.
And beaten Donald Trump with it, because you would have been, you were like, what's happening? I don't have internet here. I'm like, I'm not even going to tell you. Like,
yeah, no, I would have been livid.
Yeah, it was bad. And then naturalized citizens, if they lied on their, they're starting to like even go after that, where it's like, if your dad had lied on his thing or whatever, then they denaturalize. But like, it's crazy to me because you're an American, like you're 23.
10 years this year.
How long?
10 years, yeah. This year.
And you've been here almost 15.
Almost 20.
Yeah. You learned how to speak English how?
When I moved to this country, I only knew Backstreet Boys songs. There you go. And then my mom said I just didn't talk for months. So eventually I just picked it up.
Tell me why.
If you know Alina, her not talking for months is funny. So Alina's baby pictures are the funniest things I've ever seen in my life, because she just has a scowl her whole life. From the time she was born, she's just pissed she's alive.
Yeah, my mom said I was born pissed off. Yeah.
All right, Harry, final thoughts?
He's muted.
Sorry, choking, actually, from the Backstreet Boy comment still. But, let's see, I did the... Columbia is a... I will say this, like, one of my final things, I was like, Colombia is a beautiful country. It's one of the few South American countries I would like to visit. It is freaking gorgeous. If you don't think so, or really want to see some of the true stuff of some of like the cool streets of it, the Grand Tour Season 3, they just went down to Colombia, which was, it's freaking gorgeous. The other thing, the hyperinflation, I think Luke Radowski of We Are Change went down to Venezuela last year and was just showing off the hyperinflation of Venezuela in like actual terms, actually going there and taking American dollars and trading it into bolivars. And then some of the the ripples of some of the stuff that was happening, when a lot of people say like, hey, you can see it happening, was when Venezuela became a hotspot for Americans and Europeans on sailing trips to stop in Venezuela to exchange toilet paper and other essentials to trade for basically, they didn't have to spend money, basically just brought essentials on their boats and sold them in the country, and they could do whatever they want with there and use it as money. But I'm done. That's it.
Okay. All right. I try not to interrupt.
Yeah. First time ever. Mark calendars.
All right. So for me, I've said a lot. I won't cover Venezuela. I will thank Craig DaCosta, the Libertarian Coalition, Jason Doolittle, Ed Brehab, and Christy Avery for being our $100 a month supporters here on the show. If you love these kind of interesting conversations with fascinating people, it takes a lot of work to put all this stuff together. We've got the research team in Hody. You've got all the equipment that it takes, the monthly cost for something like Zoom, so we can talk to people all over the, you know, Alina's 2 hours away and we got to hear her thoughts. All that takes money, and all of that comes from the Patreon support. We really don't get paid for our time. Many of us put in tens of hours a week for a hobby, and we do it because we want to give you fascinating information that you don't hear anywhere else. So, if you like this, if you think that this is worth your time, then please join, become a patron of We Are Libertarians. WeAreLibertarians.com/support. You can sign up on PayPal. You can sign up through Bitcoin or the Patreon. You can sign up many different ways and support us many different ways. And I want to thank you for that. I switched categories to government and organizations, and I noticed today we are number 40 in that category now. So We Are Libertarians is a top 50 podcast in one of the iTunes categories. If you would like to help us get to number one in that category, it is completely possible. News and politics is tough, and we do fit the description of a government and organization podcast. So please go rate and review us in iTunes, subscribe on, you know, if I listen on Downcast, but I went into the podcast catcher app or the iTunes on my computer, and I subscribe to We Are Libertarians on all those different devices. Do that for us, please, because then that tells iTunes, hey, these guys are hot right now. And so they're going to bump us up the rankings. So please support us in that way. If we can maintain a top spot up in that, in one of these categories, that really helps us grow in a significant way. You know, we just passed our 2 millionth download. We officially passed 2 million downloads this past week, about 10,000 downloads an episode. The dailies get about 3,000 now. That's up from 1,000 2 months ago.
If only every download gave you a dollar.
That's right. Just $1. Just $1. Kick in a dollar.
You could get like a 2-bedroom luxury apartment.
You sign up if you sign up on pay. Yeah, exactly. I could. This, you're not supposed to blow the mystique. it really does help and make a big difference. And I'm able to do more and subscribe to better services or do more. You know, do more with video or eventually hire a person to organize some more stuff. So we really do need your financial support. It is how we fund all of this. It costs a lot to run a podcast network of this size. We have about 40 people involved in this. Those people, if you are involved in We Are Libertarians, I don't like to ask you to pay for equipment, to pay for services. I want to give you the tools. You know, somebody like Brian Nichols and the Brian Nichols Show or the Daily Hosts or Boss Hog of Liberty, you know, they have their own Patreon. So we're going to have a talk and they're going to have to start pitching in some more. And I have to start charging them a fee. Every time Jeremiah self-promotes, he's going to have to send me $5. I'll be the richest man ever, Harry. So yeah, Harry's drinking. He spit out his $5,000 scotch. So, you know, but it does, you know, when you bring on somebody, we're onboarding a couple new podcasts pretty soon. And I want to be able to send them equipment. And if they're going to get involved in We Are Libertarians, I don't want them to have to pay to do it. So if they're going to give their time and talents and resources. So please pitch in that way. Thank you to everybody who downloads. Even if you're just a stranger out there and you never pitch in, thank you for listening because those numbers really do help. And it's pretty humbling and cool to get to say that we have this many people listening to us. It's not quite millions yet, like Alina's mom thinks, but we're getting there. And these are some of the ways that you can make it possible. So Harry's showing off his box on camera. Dewars, some sort of gross liquor. Honestly, Harry, you need to be like Aaron and stop drinking.
Mm-hmm. Clean Life 3.7.
Right.
I can't remember which one I'm on now.
We need to talk too. We need to talk about the keto soon because I'm gonna do the keto.
I had a porterhouse steak tonight. Hannah did a great job with it.
See, I don't have a Hannah. That's the problem.
She seared it on one side in cast iron, and then she broiled it on the other.
Alina, come cook for me, please.
Pink center. Perfect.
I don't think you can have empanadas on keto, so what are you going
to
do?
I don't know, man. That'd be tough to give up. She taught me how to make empanadas, and she taught me how to make pico de gallo, and I love...
Pico's good. Oh. You could do pico.
Yeah, you can have that. You can have all that.
Not
except the empanada, unless you make the shallot cheese.
Mm-hmm. I need like the next week to just go crazy, just like empanadas and Cracker Barrel and all the stuff that I'll never be able to eat again. All right, that's enough of this. Thank you to Hody Johns for doing the research. Thank you to Aaron, to Alina for spending the time. It's fun having you. And
yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And Harry, it's been a pleasure having you on, and thank you for Skyping in.
Zoom?
Whatever.
Made me Zoom in instead of using the Discord.
Just
all right, guys. I just can't take anymore.
Do the listeners know the guy from Norway is still in your closet?
Yes, he's frozen in my closet. That was fun. I liked that. He was a great...
No, he was.
He was awesome. A good time, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So always finding interesting people to come on the show like Alina. A lot of fun foreigners lately. All right. We'll see you guys tomorrow.